Tell me your dreams over bacon and eggs. We'll share a laugh and a story and even a wish on the breakfast dish. Bop.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the breakfast. Yeah, there's Griffin Cork, my co-host, the Griffster, the G-Meister, the Graffiti. Hey, welcome to the Breakfast Dish, Mother and Son podcast, where we...
We're doing it like this? All right, continue. I don't know where my edit point is going to be where we're going to start this, but no, we've started, okay. Karen. We've started
start,
now, so no.
Start the way you normally
going.
Start.
No, I want start. You to keep no. going with your radio voice right now.
Griffin, thanks so much for being here again on this fabulous Monday morning as we open up the doors to the breakfast dish. We put the eggs on the bacon and fry up the toast and pour the juice in the coffee. And hey, you are a sight for sore eyes today because I haven't seen you since 2 days ago. Hey, great to see you, Griffin. What's the weather like out there?
Sorry, I love your radio voice. I need to just check a few things. This is a podcast called The Breakfast Dish, so we are proclaiming that we are quote-unquote breakfast experts, and I need to ask you about three things that you said. We're going to put the eggs on the bacon. We're going to fry up the toast, like in a frying pan. And this is the big one for me. We're going to pour the juice in the coffee. Is that what you said?
Yeah, if I was not a vegetarian, I would put my eggs on my bacon so you get both tastes in each bite.
Okay.
Many people fry up their toast, like your late grandfather, who used to like butter his toast and then fry it up in some grease. Lots of people do that.
What? Is that a real thing?
Juice. Yeah, and the juice in the coffee thing is just something I stupidly do because I'm getting old.
Oh, okay. Well, this is the 24th episode of The Breakfast Dish. We haven't given such excellent culinary breakfast advice yet. What do we do normally on this show, on this podcast?
We just speak together and we're hilarious and nothing else matters. No, Griffin, you and I started this podcast because there's so many things going on online, virtually, during this time of stay away from each other that people just need to know about. And so our gorgeous, lovely, obnoxious voices tell them every Monday morning what they can listen to or watch or experience during stay away from each other times.
This is kind of an off the record bit, but do you know that I had a bit with my BFA class where I had a radio voice where every night that we spent partying, if someone stayed over at my place where I was staying, the Blue Nose, I would run to wherever they were staying at like 9 a.m. and I would be mac and cheese in the morning and I would be interviewing them and like make up. Their occupation was always like something, something, something and an expert pianist. It was always 97.3 the stars, mac and cheese in the morning. Bah, 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 bah. Yeah, 97.3 star. Like I would just be stupid, loud, obnoxious on a hungover Saturday morning while we're trying to figure out if we can get ourselves to fight class.
I thought those classmates were staying over because you were studying Brecht or something. You were hungover? You had parties?
Studying Brecht?
Son.
Yeah, Caucasian Chalk Circle 37 times.
You're breaking your mother's heart. You're breaking your mother's heart. You drink on a Friday night at school. Why weren't you studying?
Well, it sounds like you've been smoking for 50 years and you've been hiding that from me. My God.
Hey, do we have a guest that's way more interesting than us?
I don't know. We seem to always lose our way when we're trying to find a way to introduce the guest. We never quite get there. But this is it. This is the time. We are joined by Sheldon Elter, who is playing Mr. George Bailey himself in the radio production of It's a Wonderful Life with Lunchbox Theater, Vertigo Theater, and 6 Degrees Music and Sound. George, Sheldon, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I am so excited. Also, that banter was killing me. You know how hard it was not to laugh out loud? I was like, do I just laugh? I felt I should have just laughed, because that was really funny. Did you know, my wife, when she was going to the same program as you, Griffin, the bar that was right by that Mac store there used to be called the Library.
Right.
It was called the Library. So my wife's mother would call, and she's like, hey, where's Christy? I'm like, she's at the library. Her mom would be like, oh. And I'm like, yeah, she's in.
She's very smart, Mom. Listen up. Which is hilarious, because then it switched to another bar, and now it's the writing room, I think. So it's kind of back to its literary roots. Yeah, it's great.
I love it.
I wonder if that's the point. That's genius.
It is genius. It's really, really clever. And I was like, that's a great way to just get around the fact that, you know, you're clearly drinking on a Friday.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be studying.
We have to now pay Sheldon $45 because we warned him that we'd be doing some funny banter, and I had to pay him to say that the banter was funny, or else we'd be really sitting on our own, hoisted by our own petards.
But can the writing room pay us $45 for pitching their pub on our Breakfast Series podcast?
It's really good. I think you and me and Dad have gone to lunch there.
We have.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Hey, Sheldon Elder.
Hey, hey, hey.
So before we... I love saying this, before we went on air, before we went live, before we pressed record on our record machines on our computer.
By ourselves in our houses.
By ourselves in our houses. You were saying that when you, we want to know lots about Sheldon, but I just have to have you hear this story, Griffin. So you're doing a Zoom audition for Craig Hall at Vertigo Theater for the role of George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life. And you do the Zoom audition, which is weird. And what is it that Craig said to you at the end of that audition?
It was probably the coolest thing a director's ever said to me. He said, oh, wow, you've been ready to do this your whole life. I was like, oh, am I that big of a nerd about this particular story? Wow.
Right, okay. So in setting up this interview, you did let it slip to me that you are indeed a big of a nerd around this story.
Yeah, I you know what happened is I got introduced to it by this wonderful teacher. You know, I was in grade 7, like just coming into puberty. And was so in love with this. She was like this beautiful young lady who had like a big gray streak, like Rogue. Sweet. From the Marvel comics.
Totally.
From the X-Men. And she was so, she's just this fascinating lady who played piano. She helped encourage my love of music. She used to play piano at the end of the school day. And I would listen outside the school door, like of her classroom door.
Really?
To listen to her play piano. Yeah, for real. I she convinced me to join choir, which I think then I was an alto. And I was just like, well, and she introduced me to this film in class. I think it was grade 7. And she asked us to write an essay on it. And it was all about the richness of character of George Bailey, and including his father, right? Because he has that most wonderful line, you know, like he says to Mr. Potter, you know, my father died a richer man than you'll ever be. And so I wrote this essay about it, and I got an incredible mark. And then what I have done ever since grade 7 is I watched the film about 15 times, maybe more, each holiday season during, like, you know, the month of December. Oh. And or at least right now as an adult, until my wife is like, that's enough.
I was going to say, when you said the number, I didn't know that was per year. I thought that was in total.
No. No, like, I know... Like when we did the photo shoot to promote the show, and the hard part was, you know, because of COVID, we all like they Vertigo and Lunchbox, they had done all these great protocols at the theater to kind of keep us all safe. So we had to keep separate and keep our masks on, and until it was time for your photo, and then they'd have to like refigure out how to, so that they could superimpose each other in post, right? And like Photoshop it all together. And he said, he's like, Kiana Wu, who played Mary, Mary Hatch, Mary Bailey, said, he's like, she has to go. Can you just help her out? How much of the throw the lasso around the moon monologue do you know? And I was like, and then I was so embarrassed. I was like, I know all of it. I know the entire monologue. I'm off book, like, for a radio play that we're going to be reading. That's how much of a nerd I was. I was like, oh, this is embarrassing.
And I've been off book since I was 13.
That's so sad.
Kiana needs to get a gray streak in her hair right now.
Can you remember this teacher's name?
Yes. Her name was Carol Bullew. And she, look, it's in my office right here. Hang on.
I just want teachers like this to get a big shout out.
Carol Bullew, this is a gift I got from her in high school. Do you know what this is? This is a letterpress, right? So when you squeeze it, it prints out a press steel stamp that says "From the Library of Sheldon Elter."
Oh!
Oh my God!
Just
which really means the bar of Sheldon Elter.
She's just like, she was just the coolest lady who was like, and you know, we're still friends. She's a big fan of the movie as well. So we've been in chats, and she's I think she's got like, she took me out. I was a troubled teen, right? So I had a lot of family issues, and she recognized that very quickly and took me to her parents' farm. I got to ride horses. Basically, I was like, did she just bring me out here to do farm work for the day? which we did, but we like they. I got to ride horses. We played cards. I learned how to play crib. You know, it was just cool. And I just met her family, and I was just like this teenager, right? And it was just like, wow. And I didn't realize it was like how formative something that a kind of experience would be on my life, which is probably why her introduced me to the film was such a big deal.
This is exactly why I used to do the breakfast series on Facebook, is that you think you know a person, or you think, you know, I know where you're in town, I know what you're doing, but I don't know these rich, excellent stories. So this is fantastic. And I hope that at some point we can let her listen to this. I bet you've told her this a million times.
Oh, she's already asked. Okay. I have to tell her. I have to look up your guys' links and send her all the links. She's already asked. She already texted me 2 days ago and asked me. So I'm excited to, this will be really cool.
That's nice.
Isn't that cool? She's like, please, I want all the, like, give me all the, like, where are all your media events? Send them to me. And I'm like, okay, all right. And it's just like, it's really cool. Also, I think she knows how important this one was to me. Like, and she's been such a big fan. She's come and seen a lot of my plays. You know, it's really cool.
The image of you waiting at the school door and like listening into her playing piano, that's the most lovely thing I think I've heard in months.
Yeah, there's something, you know, what I'm scared about most is that she's going to listen to this interview and then go like, oh, there was like a...
He what? Like I didn't know that.
Like a pubescent teenager just like pining, listening to the door, to her practice piano.
How do you That's solve a, weird. A problem like Maria? Singing to yourself in the hallway. So I have to ask, because this is always a question that's super interesting. Have you ever done a radio play before, like that kind of either an actual radio play, like just audio with all the goots and gadgets that make the sounds, or like the live one that people watch? Is this your first time?
No, this is the first thing. And like Thomas, you did all the Foley art, like all the like which like I even this is how much of a nerd I am. I was like, did you guys know who Jack Foley was?
Yeah.
That's where Foley art comes from, right? It's just like, it's the coolest thing ever. And I'm just like, wow. And I think, you know, the way they did this kind of stuff, it's like, I don't know. I'd never done it before. And so the hard part was when, you know, I probably could have done it off book, but, but you know, you're looking at your script and then I'm watching across the room, this amazing artist, like juggle props and microphones, his ability to move without knocking things over or like doing soft steps so he can get to the next prop to make all the sounds. I was blown away. And for me, that was, you know, I've done some radio work back in the day. I used to do things for like, 92.5, which at the time was Power 92 back then.
No way.
And the stuff I would do was all like, Power 92 is bringing you another rock and ride dance party.
Oh my God. We all have a radio voice.
And I was like, you want me to do it that way? And they're like, they love it. And I'm like, And so right after college, that's how I'd make like a quick couple $100 and just like go in for 5-10 minutes. And I'd do it every, you know, couple times a month.
Amazing.
And I was just like, wow, but doing a play like this, that's the thing that blew my mind. I just watch and finding how to figure out how do you create all these iconic moments from a film. And so you can, you know, can hear breath. It was just like blew my mind.
Yeah.
Blew my mind that that's how we can connect in through an auditory experience and try to recreate visual experiences. And it was really cool.
So Thomas Geddes, he did all the Foley live, like while you guys were also acting live during the recording, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. I didn't know that. Holy wow.
Yeah. You'd think it would be something he'd do after.
Yeah. Well, some of it had to be done that way. Just a couple of things like, but there is so much that he did live that was so fascinating, even to the point where you would have to prep yourself in the script and then look up and then, you know, cue him. So that if you're going to throw something, that he can follow you. Like, there's that, you know, the iconic moment where they throw the rock.
Yes, I do.
Into the old Granville house. And so, you know, you raise your arm and then you make your throwing noise, like, ah! And then he'd, in a crash box, he'd break glass and give it the time. So he's watching you. And I was like, this is incredible. It was such a cool experience for that.
And then you look down and you go, what did you wish for when you threw that rock?
What did you wish for when you threw that rock? Oh, my God. I love that you know.
Hey, what's up? What did you wish for when you threw that rock? 97.3 is a Sturge.
You know what was really hard? Was juggling, like, when you know something so well like that. I was constantly in talks with Craig Hall, the director, to go like, hey, how far do I go here? Like, I know it so well.
Craig,
like,
how much do you want?
I'm just like, how much do I sound like Jimmy Stewart?
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I can't go that far. It has to be Sheldon as well, right? Because the point of that whole film was that, you know, George was supposed to be the everyman.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It was originally supposed to be Cary Grant.
Oh, I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so the whole script was, what's his name? Philip Van Doren Stern, I think. And it was a short story, and that didn't get published. And so what he did was he managed to get some way to publish it and then sent it out almost like a greeting card. And he sent it out to family and friends. And then the script, he turned it, like, a producer read this greeting card and was like, this is brilliant. And then turned it, he's like, let's turn it into a film and we'll get Cary Grant. And then it was supposed to be like, I think he was a politician.
The character?
Yeah. And then George didn't win the election. And then he's kind of bitter about it. And then he's going to commit suicide. And it just kind of fizzled out. And then Frank Capra picked it up.
I believe myself to be a huge It's a Wonderful Life fan. This kind of stuff I did not know. So this is fascinating to me.
Can you imagine me in these rehearsals with my castmates? And then I'm like, Craig was like, Sheldon, would you like to say something? I'm like, okay, well, actually. The rock scene, for example, they hired a marksman because they didn't trust that Donna Reed, who I think they had gone through like several actresses trying to pick her. But they get Donna Reed and they didn't even assume she was like a country girl because of where she came from. I think she was from like Des Moines or something. And then they hire a marksman to shoot out the window.
After she does the throw.
Yeah, but they didn't know she played baseball. So first take, she just shatters it. And then everyone's shocked. There's so many things, and he would stop the reading just so I could say things. He said, okay, do you want to talk about this part? I'm like, yeah, I would love to. You know, the scene where, Uncle Billy says, like, he's just like, I think I can spit in Potter's eye. I think I will. Show me the direction. And he walks off camera and you hear a bunch of crashes. And what happened was a stagehand on set knocked down a bunch of stuff.
That was accidental?
Yeah. And the actor just said, I'm all right. I'm all right. And they kept rolling, and that's the take they used.
Wow.
There's so many beautiful moments of that, like, and, you know, they, like, everything right down from the kiss. Frank Capra didn't want it to be rehearsed, so he didn't. It was what you see is literally the first take, and that's why when you watch that iconic scene where they're up close with the phones, and it's such an awkward, like, what is happening? This is a weird kid, like, where they fall in love but they're angry at each other, and then you're like, it's so awkward, and you're like, what? Because they never rehearsed it.
Oh my gosh,
it's so beautiful. That's the stuff for me that, you know. And the crazy thing is, I'm such a nerd about this, and it's not even a. It wasn't even a popular film.
Yeah, I heard that, right? Like, it didn't really make a splash when it first came out, right?
No. So what happened was the rights, like, I think they made like half of their projections. So it didn't do very well. And then you're like, it's because it came out with another Christmas movie with very similar themes. And it just kind of fell flat. But then what they didn't renew the rights. So then the rights, as they were floating there, what these television stations could do was just air it at Christmas. So people would see it incessantly, which then it became a staple of Christmas. And it already is what I think is a great story. It just, over time, when you see something that much, it just becomes part of your tradition. And I think that's the coolest thing.
I don't know anybody else that knows as much about any kind of subject matter ever.
Isn't it silly, though? It's like, it's such a silly one.
Griffin, may I remind you that before the pandemic, I was in rehearsal for the other Josh Cohen, in which I was playing Neil Diamond. So
that's
I wonder how many times you think Chris Stockton stopped rehearsal and said, Karen, did you want to say anything about Neil Diamond right now?
That's such a good move of Craig and now Chris to just, as a director, be like, okay, and then what do you want to say here? Also, I have to give a thought to the...
What?
I have to give a thought to the marksman, because can you imagine being on set with a gun and not having anything to do anymore? Yeah. Oh, I guess. Oh, okay. So I'll go then. Good job. Well done.
Thank God for unions, right? At least you know he got paid. Yeah, he didn't have to do anything. Just like, well, I guess you didn't need me at all.
Crazy. I actually decaled my bullets with snowflakes, but I guess that doesn't matter. So I'll be out.
So here's a question that you probably know, and I think you've already answered, but it went from a story to greeting card right to film. It was never a radio play before the film. Because what I love, what I don't know why I find this so fascinating, but this movie becomes fantastic, and then somebody decides to turn it into a live radio play that you watch people on stage acting out the radio play, and now because of COVID, the radio play of the live radio play is happening. Like, it's just, it's this weird full circle to me, but it never existed as that, or did it exist as a radio play between film and the time somebody decided to put radio play live on stage in a theater? Was it ever recorded as a radio play ever? Do you know?
Not that I know of, no. I think it went short story to like what they called a greeting card, which was really just like this guy sharing his short story with people.
Yeah, a little chapbook or something.
Yeah, and then, like I said, it fizzled out with this one producer, then went to Frank Capra. And then, and apparently, and the really crazy part is, as far as I know, the writing process was so rapid that the writers did not have a good time with Frank Capra. I don't think he was the nicest guy to work with. And it was just like one of those things where it's just like, no, change it, change this, constantly making changes, which is, you know, there's something about I laugh about that kind of hardship, especially as a writer.
Yeah.
Right. To imagine what that was like to like constantly have to just, well, throw those pages out the window and let's start with something completely different. And to see the final product is like, But as a radio play, I don't think it had. And there's something to me that just makes this, the idea that people are going to be sitting around a computer or something with like a speaker or headphones and crowding around. Like my grandmother used to tell me stories when she was saying they would sit on the reservation and they would, they were listening to like Cassius Clay back when he was still Cassius Clay.
Yeah.
And they would listen to his boxing matches around the radio. And then everybody, because one person on the reservation had a radio. So everyone had to come to the house and crowd around the radio. And I'm like, there's something about that that makes me excited at the idea of people coming together to just listen.
I want to know if Griffin knows who Cassius Clay is.
You're talking about Muhammad Ali, yeah?
I'm such a good mother. I have raised you well.
No, we've never talked about Muhammad Ali. I have my own pop culture interests. Truly, the way that I figured that out is when I was, I don't know, late teens, and I saw the epic rap battle between Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan. And I think one of Michael Jordan's lines was, you want to talk about Cassius, cash and checks, or something like that.
Okay, I want to know, Griffin Cork, if there is an epic rap battle with Mr. Potter and George Bailey. Does that exist?
No.
It has to.
No. I mean, so, all right. So, Karen, if you could get on your beat producer friends, yeah. Me and Sheldon will write a rap battle for George Bailey and Mr. Potter.
Great. Awesome.
Is there a moment in the film, this is kind of a cop-out question, but I have to know because you know so much about it. Is there a moment in the film that sticks out to you as, like, your favorite?
The Lasso Around the Moon is probably great, but I remember geez, this is a hard one to pick because I'm such a nerd about it.
I know.
I just like because you have to watch this character fall first. And he's got such a chip on his shoulder when he's a young guy that, you know, it's after they throw the rocks and he starts talking about what he wished for. And she's just so clueless to this girl who's just standing there in love with him. And she's really the turning point of the whole film. She's the one who saves him. She's the one who goes and gets everybody to come and help him. She's the one who calls while he's losing his mind. And he's going on. He's got all these big ideas. And to me, it's probably one of my favorite moments. It's just like, I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world. You know, I'm going to go places. And he talks about all the places he's going to go. He's going to build bridges. And it's just, to me, it's just like, he sort of just has to go like, oh, wait, you're going to make a wish. She's going to throw a rock. And she makes a wish for the two of them, which is, to me, probably my favorite moment, because she's just like, because what he's forgetting about is everyone else that he's affecting. And you know, and then throughout the rest of the film, he does so many things for other people, and that when he's in trouble, he doesn't realize how much he's done, which is why people want to help him, which is what I think is the most beautiful part. So
there is, this radio play is an hour long, am I right about that?
Yeah, it's about 50 minutes.
So does it kill you as a It's a Wonderful Life nerd to be standing there reading the script of the radio play and some of the most iconic lines maybe aren't in there, and you're just like, I need that one line in there. Do you ever feel that way?
Yeah. I love it when he calls Mr. Potter a scurvy little spider.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites, because in the vast scheme of things, you're nothing but a scurvy little spider. And there's no time. And I could see why the edits are made that way. But I think, generally speaking, I think they did a great job. This, like, the script does a great job of keeping the parts that really touch your heart. Because some of them, you're like, it's interesting too. You have to remember, I'm like, oh, right, how do you describe that to someone? What they're seeing, and so you'll hear characters literally just respond to it by saying the action. They're like, oh no, he fell into the ice.
Right.
And it's just like, I was like, oh, so I think the script does a pretty darn good job. I mean, it's like I said, when you know something that well, it's always like, oh, it's like, it's in the same way, it's like reading the book and then seeing a movie, and then you're always like, ah, oh, the book.
Is there something that you, I mean, yeah, it's because you have such an encyclopedia knowledge of the universe of the movie. Is there something that during the radio play, or maybe Craig's direction, or one of the actors takes on it, or like something Thomas did? Is there something that knew you discovered about it in the room? Maybe that's a big question.
That's the brilliant part. Like, I think Kiana had never seen the film. I think she'd looked up like a couple of clips maybe, but she's so like, there's a beauty about the story and the way it kind of unfolds that an intuitive actor like Kiana can like just clue into. And she's just so charming, and you know, and I think Craig did such a great job of helping her along the way without, you know, showing her like clips or,
right,
you totally. Know, it was really cool. And that's for me is the coolest part. Or watching Tinashe, like when you watch some of these people in the room switching characters. So Kevin Rothrey plays multiple characters, Tinashe. I think Kiana, I think I'm the only one who really doesn't play multiple characters other than like versions of George. And when they have scenes with other characters, but they're the same, but they're both characters.
Yeah.
It's really, Tinashe has to do it. I know Kevin had to do it. And to watch them flip in the moment. And when I heard the playback, when I just heard like a rough cut, I was like, wow, that to me, the skill of the actor to be able to switch back and forth, as well as like listen to their own takes, because they're having to play so many voices that, you know, even though I know what the character sounds like in the movie, to watch them do their own take because they have to have like 9 different voices, it's pretty cool.
I know Kevin Rother and Catherine Fathom had performed in a version of this at Lunchbox before. I saw it, I want to say 3 times, but maybe I think I saw it 3 times because I saw it twice in one of the runs. They have done that version of it. You, Tinashe, and Kiana were not necessarily part of the first Lunchbox version, but part of this one. But had either of you ever done this radio play outside of this production this time?
No, I don't think so. I will say this, there's so many amazing vocal performances from these artists, but I think Catherine Fathom might steal the show with Matilda.
Yep.
Who is the secretary. Her Zuzu is little kid Zuzu.
Amazing.
But Matilda kind of steals the show. It's just one of those voices where I'm like, that is the funniest thing. And especially if you know like Catherine, who's just this, I've known for years and is a worked with her so many times and just a phenomenal artist, but you're like, that is the funniest thing ever.
She was built for that.
Oh, it's just so endless, wobbly old voice, and it cracks me up. I love it.
She was built for that show. She was built for that era. Like, Catherine Phatom should have been, oh my God, I want to say Violet. Like, she should have, like, that would have been her growing up, right?
Oh.
This old thing, oh my gosh. I only wear this when I don't care how I look. Like, when she gives that line, I'm just like, oh, you should have played this part.
Yeah. Well, see, there's a moment when they're young, you know, in the
soda shop?
Yeah, they're in the shop. Mr. Gow's shop. What does he say? You would like a 3 cents worth of shoelaces, Violet? She's like, yes, Georgie Porgy. And she's like, I like him. And then Mary says, like, oh, you like every boy. And it's like, yeah, what's wrong with that? And you're like, that is the weirdest thing. Because in the film, they're like, I don't know, 6 years old?
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, my God. That's so weird. Yeah, yeah. Different times. And it's the moment when, after she gets her licorice, she says to George, and we don't have this in the radio play, but it's one of my favorites. Help me down. And George says, help you down. He's just like, what? Because he's just a boy. Like, why would I help you down? You're young and I don't need to help you. And it's the funniest moment. And then Mary sticks her tongue out at Violet, like, yeah, take that. And there's just so many beautiful little moments like that, that color that I'm like, that I do miss. But that stuff to me is just like, it just finds so charming of that story.
Oh, and this is the perfect, like, there's lots of people doing stuff online, and it's so good because I think it right now is when theater artists and theater lovers are missing these Christmas traditions more than anything. So the fact that so many companies are helping us still experience that in some way, it's just that feeling as an audience member of going, oh, you as a theater company care about me. Like, none of this feels like, well, we have to do this thing to keep ourselves relevant. Every one of these things feels like our audience really needs this right now. And Lunchbox and Vertigo, and to even think, like, I know Craig directed the first, well, every version of it so far, but to think how well it fits into that mandate of mystery and ghosts or whatever, right, in Vertigo. But I just think there are so many audience members like the darling Diane Blackwells that live for this, that lived in the time of radio plays, that have seen this show at Lunchbox a gazillion times and now get a chance to go back to the old days, and like you say, and sit around the radio and listen to it. It's such a great gift for the audience. Like, that's the best Christmas gift ever. I can't wait. I just can't wait.
So let's get into the brass tacks a little bit. Where how do people see it? When does it run? See it? How do people listen to it? Where do people go?
I know they can go to vertigotheater.com.
Right.
And I know you can. I'm not sure how all those kind of tickets work, but I know that you should probably get on it quickly because, you know, with the internet, so many things, there's once you reach a certain capacity for, like, those kind of, and I think once you purchase it, I think you get the recording for a certain period of time. So even if you can't finish, you can listen to it to another time, or listen to it multiple times, which I'll probably do. And I'm pretty sure you can get, there are links through not only vertigotheater.com, but as well as Lunchbox Theater. And I'm not sure if Six Degrees Music and Sound has it on theirs, but it's really interesting. I'm like, what you're saying, I'm my office right now is set up. I have to turn that screen behind me, as you might see on the Zoom call here, but
yeah.
I'm turning this into a green screen, and I'm getting ready for the Bessel Newfoundland Christmas pageant ever.
Oh yeah.
Whiz Giggling Productions. And it's really interesting to kind of just see the way, like what you're saying, Karen, that the, you know, the people are trying to still share art, even if it's online, and watching all the artists adapt to how we present it.
Vertigotheater.com. If you go to vertigotheater.com, it's the other radio plays that they're offering, and It's a Wonderful Life are side by side. It's beautiful. Big red button, buy tickets. And it says here, you only need to purchase one per household. Obviously, you'll be emailed the link to watch the show within 24 hours of purchasing your show. All the instructions will be in that link. So, and you can also purchase tickets for others. Just leave their email address in the comment section, and you can send it off for somebody else to watch and enjoy Sheldon as George Bailey.
That's so cool. One per household, crowd around the computer, get your Bluetooth speaker.
And it's $20. Like, it's nothing.
How long does it run? Like, how long is the link purchase available?
Well, Tuesday, December 15th is the... It hasn't opened yet, right, Sheldon?
No.
So Tuesday, December 15th is the first performance. They're at 7:30, so it's... There's a set time to listen and watch this. And it goes Saturday, Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, all the way to December 24th at 2 p.m. And there's also a noon one on December 24th. So there's lots of options. And actually coming up to Christmas on Wednesday the 23rd, there's a noon on Tuesday the 22nd. So lots of options to listen and watch to that. Listen, but imagine you're watching.
No, you're watching it with your ears.
Can you think of something in the world right now that wouldn't exist or would be different if you weren't born?
Oh, you just George Bailey'd me?
I totally did.
You just, well, I guess you Clarenced me, really.
I Clarenced
you.
Yeah, I mean, immediately I think of my brother Derek, who's 3.5 years younger than me. And how many times, you know, like, we've been there for each other, and we were both, like, you know, constantly getting hurt and daredevils. And there are just moments from, like, you know, where he probably could have died if I wasn't there. And there are probably also moments where he wouldn't have broken a bone if I wasn't there. But, you know, like, immediately I think of if I was George in this moment, I would go, like, yeah, I would think of my little brother as well. You're like, because, you know, I could have lost him many times.
Yeah, yeah.
And just, you know, how you protect each other as siblings.
And what you did for your teacher. Like, can you imagine what her teaching life would have been like if she hadn't had you as a piece of joy in her life, too? Who would have lifted those hay bales?
I was gonna say, she didn't have you as a farmhand.
But when you look up to someone like that, you don't think of that you might have had an effect on them, because they're affecting you so much. So I've never thought of that.
But... Oh, 100%, 100%. Why do you think she's texting you going, I have to see this, I have to read everything about it?
I can't wait to listen to some more of your podcast here, because this is the most delightful interview. Thank you.
Oh, that's nice of you, Sheldon. Thank you.
It's just there's so many wonderful things going on in Calgary and all over Alberta and all over Canada right now that you can experience. And Griffin, just so you know, when you ask me the question, what else is happening, I'm going to record it later, because I'm going to try to get in like a whole bunch of things. There's so many wonderful things going on, and I do have that special place in my heart for It's a Wonderful Life and Christmas Carol. And so we've handled two Christmas Carols and an It's a Wonderful Life now, and I feel Christmas fulfilled. My pockets are full of Zuzu's petals of joy.
All I was going to say, Karen, is that was a really good question when you Clarenced our guest. There's part of me that wants you to do that to every guest. It won't be as thematically appropriate, but it's very fun to hear the answers. I have to do some few housekeeping things here by thanking our supporters, the Calgary Arts Development Authority, the Rosé Foundation, and the Calgary Foundation. The intro music you just heard and the outro music you're about to hear is by Alexander Kamen, who just put out a new single, actually, so go listen to that right now. And all graphic design has been done by Morgan Ermter. Karen, what's going on this week? Insert post-recorded section. Now
I'm going to try to squish in as many Christmas performances as I can in the next couple minutes. We've talked about Theatre Calgary's Christmas Carol, Blue Jeans Theatre Christmas Carol, A Drag Story, Lunchbox Theatre and Vertigo Theatre, and Six Degrees production of It's a Wonderful Life. There is also StorybookTheatre.org is presenting Annie over the Christmas season. RosebudTheatre.com, a one-man Christmas Carol starring Nathan Schmidt with a sliding ticket scale, which I think is great. ForteMusical.ca is presenting their 7th Naughty But Nice edition called 7 on Screen. You can go to Ticks on the Square to buy tickets for the other show our guest Sheldon Elder's in, is the Best Little Newfoundland Christmas Pageant, put on by Whiz Giggling Productions. CitadelTheatre.com is also presenting their production of Christmas Carol, and AlbertaTheatreProjects.com. Last week, you could live stream their reading of Wizard of Oz, and now they have that video on demand. And that's what's happening this
week. Gosh, what a big retinue of things to happen this week. Wow.
Did you just say retinue?
I don't know if I used that word correctly, I'll be honest.
I don't even know that word retinue. Do you, Sheldon? Do you know retinue?
Nope.
Sheldon, how we like to end the breakfast dish, usually, is we like to ask our guests a improvised breakfast-themed question that Karen will make up right here on the spot. 3, 2, 1.
George Bailey's favorite breakfast. What is it?
Oh, it's bacon and eggs. Super simple. Sunny side up, but not too runny. And the toast. It's gotta be crisp bacon. It can't be too. You want it to. You hold it up and it still stays firm. That's. not too much butter on the toast, but spread all the way to the edges. And that's what I would say.
Okay, every part of my ounce wanted to ask you to do some George Bailey in this, and I thought maybe that's going too far, and I'm so glad you did that.
It's a Christmas miracle. We haven't set up a donation button yet for this podcast, but we will. If you donate to the breakfast dish right now, I'll send all of that money to Sheldon Alter specifically for that little clip of audio. Thank you very much for listening to The Breakfast Dish. Please rate, subscribe, like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, I don't know, all the things. If you have an arty thing that you're doing that you want to talk to us about, reach out to us at thebreakfastdish@gmail.com. We will be taking a hiatus for the month of January, but we'll see you real soon.
I thought maybe that we should end this podcast. This podcast should go out on Sheldon doing a little bit of the Last of the Moon monologue.
Are you okay with that, Sheldon?
Why, what do you want, Karen? What do you want, the moon? No, you just say the word, and I'll throw a lasso around and I'll pull it down. Hey, see, that's a pretty good idea. I'll give you the moon, Karen. Then you can swallow it, and it'll all dissolve, see? And the moonbeams will shoot out the ends of your fingers and the tips of your toes and the ends of your hair. Wait, am I talking too much?
This is no longer a free podcast. You owe us all and $45. Happy holidays, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Karen. Merry Christmas, Griffin Cork. Merry Christmas, you wonderful old building alone. Bop, 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 bop.
This has been The Breakfast Dish.